Chapter 20. Ulanor, Temple Gargant Sanctum. Momentum, direction, ruthless aggression. These are the true weapons of the victorious. Hesitation is defeat. And we hesitated when the guns of our brothers roared. Shock laid the first blow. We were lax and they were not. The war lasted 7 years, but the dream was destroyed in that first second. What was left worth fighting for after? Pride. Foolish pride. Cestus assault rams that Courland had kept in reserve now flew past the lead transports in the final seconds before contact with the objective. Their melter charges and reinforced prows smashed through the walls of the Temple Gargant in blasts of superheated air and vaporized metal. Squads deposited within the structure pushed into the waiting foe with blades, bolters, and grenades, forcing beachheads 50 meters into the mechanical behemoth. Volleys of fire from the gunships raked across the mobs of orcs crowding the surface of the war machine, rockets and bullets flaring upward towards them as they descended. A few Imperial Navy fighters and bombers flew final passes above and below the focus of the Space Marine attack, plasma-tipped missiles and heavy bolters incinerating and shredding even more defenders. Turrets spat torrents of shells and las blasts, exacting a deadly toll for the bravery of the crews. In rapid waves, the Space Marine gunships dispatched their cargoes into the breaches created by the assault rams, while ad hoc transports deposited more squads into the ramparts and walkways of the Temple Gargant's exterior to seize conventional ingress points. Courland kept close to Vulcan. The Primarch did not pause for a moment, his hammer in constant motion as he waded into the orcs crewing the Temple Gargant. Mega armor shattered under the blows, power claws, and energy blasts bouncing from the ancient warplate forged by his hand. Courland had little time to take stock of his surroundings and was surprised by what he saw. He had expected the usual orc technology, clanking pistons and gears, hissing steam pipes, the stench of oil and corroded metal. Instead, the interior of the Temple Gargant was almost pristine. The walls were chrome-like, painted with friezes of simple black and white dags or check patterns. Embossed plates of glyphs marked many doorways and junctions. Signs, he realized with some shock. Doors slid open with faint purrs. The lights were a pale blue, with barely a flicker of power flow. In fact, there seemed to be very little in the way of outward energy sources. Everything hummed and gleamed with its own radiant light, the same strange power that fueled all the new orc technology. He had little enough time to process the importance of this observation. The needs of the mission were far more pressing. Hundreds of space marines forced their way into the hovering edifice, charging into brutal combat with the great beast's monstrous elite. Terminators and dreadnoughts led the assault in many places, their heavier armor weathering the fire of the orcs to allow their power-armored brothers to gain a foothold, weapons filling the corridors and chambers with continuous hails of fire. There were few foes that survived the charge of Vulcan, but many adjoining corridors and halls spilled forth their own flood of raging greenskins as the Primarch thrust fast towards the heart of the impossible war machine. Armed and armored with the best from the slave lines of Ulanor's manufactories, these creatures were as deadly as Esad Wire had warned. Yet they were confronted at the fore by 7 chapter masters and twice as many more space marines of high rank and great prowess. Many of Vulcan's companions carried artifacts dating back to the Heresy Wars and earlier. Swords, hammers, maces, and shields that first saw battle during the Great Crusade and even the Unification Wars. They cut down the orcs with plasma pistols, Vulcite carbines, and thermal blasters forged on Mars before any of their chapters had been founded. And each warrior was already a renowned hero amongst his brothers, his life a succession of great victories and campaigns that would grace future roles of honor. Their names and titles would be lauded by generations to come. Courland felt humbled by such company. But in that time of unrelenting madness, a seeming eternity in which he waded into a sea of screaming orc faces, he finally understood the meaning of Vulcan's assertions. He had faith. In himself, in the choice of the Primarch to take him as his heir in command above all others present, and he had faith in his battle brothers. If ever a band of warriors could triumph against the odds ranged against them, they had been gathered here. If there were any weapon in the armory of the Imperium that Courland could choose to wield at that moment, it would be 3,000 warriors of the Adeptus Astartes. And lastly, but most keenly, he had faith in Vulcan. The Primarch was a vital energy, every bit as powerful as the one against which they were set. Perhaps it was destiny or some other impulse that drove Vulcan, but whatever the cause, he seemed set on a course and knew exactly where to lead them. Into the depths of the Temple Gargant, racing towards a confrontation with a great beast. They came upon a large hall at least 200 meters long and 30 high. Here the lights were dimmed, a respectful ochre that bled orange shadows behind the advancing space marines. The greater part of the force had created a cordon and held back the orc counterattack, while Vulcan, Courland, and their companions, accompanied by a mixed chapter company 200 strong, including the cadre of librarians, pressed ahead for the final assault on the great beast. The sides of the hall were piled with detritus several meters deep. Tattered cloth, bent metal spars, and splintered wooden poles made strange shapes in the gloom. The footfalls of the space marines echoed from the metallic walls and ceiling, loud against the backdrop of weapons fire resounding through the corridors behind. "What is this?" asked Thane, moving to one of the trash piles. He pulled free a piece of cloth several meters long. He turned it, a richly embroidered sheet, slashed and burned, golden thread glimmering in the light. Words were stitched into the design, human words, above a double-headed eagle. "It's the Aquila! By the Emperor!" All of the rubbish was made of broken standards, torn and hacked and desecrated by the orcs. Metal eagles and lightning bolts adorned some of the poles, bent and hammered out of shape. "From the Triumph," growled Vulcan, ripping free a rag of banner. It bore the icon of the Blood Angels Legion. "I know this design," he whispered. "It was the personal banner of Captain Nemedius. I knew him from the Artagian campaign. His whole company died during the Olinor assault." Valifor rushed forward and laid a hand reverently upon the cloth. "One of our greatest sacrifices. I bear his sword still." They continued past the broken-heaped remains of mankind's last victory over the orcs of Olinor. The far end of the hall was not a wall, but two immense doors fashioned from grey and black marble into a grimacing orc face, layered with precious metals, studded with gems. "The breaking of the banners, I understand," said Cassandra. "But this kind of ornamentation is not in the aesthetic of the orcs." "Look at the floor," added Courland. "It is polished granite, from the parade ground along which the victorious armies of the Emperor marched," said Vulcan. He gestured towards the doors as they neared. "And doubtless this is from some other structure associated with the Triumph." Courland thought the Primarch sounded wistful. "The high point of the Great Crusade," Vulcan continued. "The culmination of decades of war. The beginning of the end, we used to think. But we did not realize what that meant, how true those words would be. Such hope, such greatness, was the height from which we fell. Here we built the tallest pinnacle before the deepest drop. If only the orcs knew what ruin they wrought here." He fell silent, and in the absence of his voice, the hall gently rang with the retort of weapons in the surrounding corridors and chambers. "An attempt at humiliation," said Beaumont. "An empty gesture." "An assertion of power," Vulcan corrected him, "stated by the great beast to its own kind. When we slay it, Our statement will be louder still. When the Space Marines were halfway down the hall, a shudder rumbled through the chamber. Two broad portals slid open, one on each side of the gateway. Metallic clanks and thudding steps heralded the arrival of a pair of identical stompers. They were fashioned as grotesque caricatures of orcs, rotund mechanical beasts with guns and saw blades for arms, the head of each almost scraping the high ceiling. They were painted in red and black with splashes of bright yellow, festooned with Titan kill banners looted from the display of the Ulanor Triumph. Corlan recognized the icon of the ancient and honored Fire Wasps Legio. Corlan barked orders even as the machines opened fire. The Space Marines split, Vulcan and one contingent heading for the engine on the right, Corlan and the rest to the Stomper on the left. An explosion engulfed three Battle Brothers, while large-caliber rounds screamed through half a dozen more. Bolts flared through the dim light, a storm of small detonations wreathing each war machine. Corland fixed his attention on the target ahead, trusting to Vulcan to deal with the other mechanical giant. Eye-like lamps blazed into life, and its head turned towards him, as though specifically seeking him out. He could see Orc crew loitering on the shoulder gantries, firing their sidearms, while the massive gun of the right arm adjusted aim amongst much gear grinding and chain rattling.
Melter bombs!
He cried, taking a fist-sized charge from his belt. The Stomper's main cannon roared again, flame and fury engulfing more of the Space Marines just behind Corland. His armor registered the wash of heat from the detonation, but he ignored the amber warning flashes. The Stomper took a step, exhaust smoke billowing as engines rumbled. It swung its right arm, a wicked chain blade thrice as long as Corland was tall. The whirring teeth snarled over the Lord Commander's head. He heard the snap of shattering ceramite and a cry from Cassandra. Glancing back, Corland saw the blade sweep on and up, bloodied teeth hurling chunks of the bisected chaptermaster across the black granite and vandalized banners. The Crimson Fists shouted their dismay and swore vengeance, the blood of their commander spattered on their armor as they charged the Orc engine. Nearing the Stomper, Corland sheathed his blade and jumped, his fingers finding purchase on the metal belly plates of the Orc war machine. The metal clanged around him as others landed on the towering engine, smashing at the armor with power fists and thunder hammers, with a more staccato chime of maglocks as melter bombs were slammed into place. Corland pulled himself up a few more meters to where a viewport was cut into the plates. A diminutive Gretchen stared out in horror. He plunged his fist into the war machine's chest and dragged the creature out of the hole. Activating the melter charge's timer, he tossed the bomb into the Stomper's interior and pushed away, jumping down to the hall floor. He had time to glance across the hall to see Vulcan emerge from the smoking ruins of the other engine, fumes coiling around the glowing head of Doom Tremor, his warplate smeared with oil and alien gore. The melter bombs detonated in a rippling cascade over a few seconds, turning the Stomper's metal hide into showers of molten drops, slashing through the mechanisms within with blasts of superheated gas. Fuel stores and ammunition ignited, ripping the Stomper apart with secondary detonations. The Space Marines withdrew as jagged debris and burning hunks of orc flesh rained down upon them. Vulcan was already at the gate, standing before the portal with Doom Tremor held aloft, ready to strike. Before he even started to swing his weapon, a line of light appeared between the doors, and the portal swung away, opening inwards to the sanctum beyond, flooding the outer hall with bright, pale green light. Corland and the others followed the Primarch over the threshold, weapons ready. Corland checked on his small force. About a third had fallen to the Stomper's attack. He could hear fighting from beyond the hall getting closer. The rear guard was collapsing. The chamber past the gateway was most definitely a power generator of some kind. Corland was reminded of the plasma chambers of Imperial fortresses and starships, the walls lined with pipes and crackling cables, in this instance thick bundles of coppery wire strewn like garlands that hissed and sparked with green energy. The air throbbed with latent power. Corlan could feel the vibrations through his armour. But it also put him in mind of the ecclesiarchy shrines. Past the mechanical aspects, the walls had the same decorations as much of the rest of the temple gargant, glyph plates and stark mosaics, painted geometric designs and pictorial murals. The chamber was semicircular, about 30 meters across, the focus of the arrangement an orc idol, sitting upon an ornate chair. The statue was at least 10 meters tall in a square-arched alcove filled with the green light of orc power. Its body was encased in thick layers of plate, intricately wrought and carved with orcish designs. A bull-horned helm with a mock-tusked face encased the head. Two claws, each the size of a space marine, rested on the arms of the chair.
"Master of Terror," muttered Odenathus.
"Speak not of the throne world in this place," growled Beaumont. "What further mockery is this?"
A plethora of cables hung from the armoured form of the idol, fizzing with power. It was clear that the statue was the centre of the power generation system, though by what means Corlan did not know. He looked to the rune priest, Thorild.
"Is this the centre of the psychic presence?"
"The power of the Wah suffuses this place," replied the Space Wolf with some evident effort, his voice strained. "It is both the vortex and the sun, the consumer and the creator."
Corlan looked sharply at the psyker, remembering the orc possession that had beset some of the other librarians. The Space Wolf seemed in control of himself, merely being poetic in his choice of words.
"Let us destroy the reactor and find the great beast," declared Thane, stepping towards the energy-shrouded god effigy. "Where are you?" Beaumont called, stalking after the exemplar. "False priest to an artificial god! No great beast here, just alien impostors!"
The air buzzed with a surge of power. An inhuman shriek echoed around the chamber, and all eyes turned to Thorild, the source of the terrible cry. He shuddered, lightning arcs of green power spewing from his psychic hood, his rune staff burning with jade flames. Moments later, the other librarians collapsed, screaming in most un-space marine fashion, cries of utter terror and agony ripped from them. Gandorin staggered wildly, flares of green sparks arcing from his helm. He stopped a few meters from Corlan, face twisted in a terrifying snarl. A second later, his head exploded, showering brain matter and skull across the Lord Commander. Disgusted, Corlan turned on the idol as the smoking corpses of the psychers clattered to the floor. Beaumont roared, the chains binding his sword to his wrist rattling as he raised his weapon in challenge.
"Face us, coward! Your death has arrived, false prophet of a doomed race. Ulanor shall be raised again, and none shall remember the great beast."
With a drawn-out creak, the statue stirred. Beaumont took a step back. Corlan felt the other space marines crowding closer as the idol's eyes became stars of green fire. He looked away, and his grip loosened on his weapons. And it was only when he felt the presence of Vulcan looming up beside him that he was able to look at the animating effigy again. The Primarch stood with his legs slightly apart, hammer held up like a shield. Power flared, and pipes hissed, while cables and wires detached from the idol with fountains of emerald sparks. Clanking and whirring, the immense machine rose up from its throne and took a step out of the alcove. Twice as tall, even as Vulcan.
"We destroyed your other engines," said Thane, brandishing his sword. "This will be no different."
Corlan looked up at the living idol, filled with foreboding. Black and white checks adorned the effigy, the face painted a deep red. At its full height, the thing seemed even bigger, swamping the Primarch with its bulk, a monster of moulded plates and jutting spikes, covered with writhing, coiling fronds of power.
"It isn't a war machine," Corlan told the others, the words almost choking him. "It's a suit
of armor.